Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You are listening to a pre-Easter edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Elogi. Say hi to the good folks out there, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, Teresa wanted to be with us, but she and the hubby are out there going through cat shelters. Hopefully they find a little fuzzy baby they can bring home tonight. But in the meantime, it'll be me and Chris to help you. No, you are not crazy if you're looking at your calendar and thinking, wait, this seems a day early. We decided to record this episode as well as Day Zero Update a day earlier than usual because Easter is this Sunday. And it's just easier for all of us to avoid that day doing anything altogether. So, yeah. But anyway, this episode is going to be for April 15th, 2022. And, so this is one of those weeks when, you know, you woke up Monday thinking, it's going to be the normal everyday bullshit we've had to put up with the past few weeks. You know, there's an ongoing invasion in Ukraine. COVID epidemic is on a downturn, but still very much a thing. And Elon Musk is being an asshole. So it's like, you know, whatever, right? And then some guy decided to go into the subways under New York City and try and machine gun a bunch of people. Yeah, fortunately, nobody died during that attempt. All the people that were either shot or injured otherwise were in stable condition. I'm pretty sure some of them have already left the hospital by now. But the guy was caught, pretty much had to turn himself in, which pretty much not only shows how fucking useless the New York Police Department is. Consider the fact that when you go into the subways in New York, there's at least like three or four NYPD officers at the gate just to make sure that nobody jumps over the turnstile. And yet not a goddamn one of them managed to stop this guy before it happened.
Yeah, they're there for homeless people.
Yeah, pretty much. But we'll be getting to that also. There was also some political shenanigans that also happened. Including a border toss-up that basically showed that Governor Greg Abbott of Texas really does proves that Governor Greg Abbott of Texas really does answer to the moneyed classes. You'll definitely see what we mean when we talk about it. And that whole banning abortion law shit, yeah, it's spreading out of Alabama, unfortunately, out of Texas, unfortunately, because yet another state decided to sign one of those 15-week bullshit laws into law. It's honestly going to be one of those states that doesn't surprise you, but it still happened. We also have some science-related news, including a really awesome bit about American Energy that ended up filling me with hope that I did not know previously existed. It's actually really cool when we tell you about it. And, of course, we got some entertainment stuff as well. And, of course, the whole, again, Elon Musk being an asshole thing. But, anyway, before we move on, before we, you know, get the show on the road, we have to start off, as we always start off, with all the shit that we've been doing up to this week, up to this point. So we'll start with you, Chris, as always. What is it that you've been doing this week?
It's starting to dry out from all this rain we've been having.
Yeah.
Though, like, we're supposed to get a bunch more tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we've had, like, two or three days without rain this week, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Though the temps aren't necessarily going up with it, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to be heading back down to the 40s here in a couple more days, so that's going to be a fun week ahead, but yeah, it's been interesting, I guess. But mm-hmm. Yeah, for things I've been watching, I've been watching a ton, been just doing a lot of work for that, but did manage to check out the new episode of Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Which is another fun little episode.
Mm-hmm.
Things are continuing on as they start to reveal more about the story stuff of what's going on and all that, but yeah, I think three more episodes to go, so we're getting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But also been watching some more Old Enough, which is the Netflix show where parents send their youngest kid, usually in like the toddler age range, 2 to 4 years old, somewhere around there, to go do like their first errand. I watched a few episodes last week, managed to get a few more this week, and ones this week seem to be particularly about the parents kind of dealing with the stress and worry of, you know, their kid going out for their first big errand and sometimes having trouble getting them to go do it. At times, convincing them to do that. So, more fun times there. Seeing that. So that's still a fun show. People should check out. Let's see. For games, been playing some more Rocket League. Having fun with that. But let's see. Also been playing some more MLB The Show 22. As they are about to start their Jackie Robinson Day event. Is that, I think, it's either today or tomorrow, I think the day is that commemorates the first day that Jackie Robinson played in the majors, the Brooklyn Dodgers, now the LA Dodgers. But yeah, just been enjoying putting some more time into it and kind of playing with the collection aspect of the game for the Diamond Dynasty mode. Getting all these cards and all that. So that's been a fun time. And the other game I've been playing is the Chrono Cross Radical Dreamers Edition that they put out. That is, I kind of came into it not really having a great idea of what to expect out of it. I had not really played the original.
Yeah, me neither. So that makes two of us.
Yeah, I had played enough to get to the like little town at the beginning of the game. But I was playing right before bed, so my mind could not figure out what to do from there. And that's about where I left off. So coming back into this, for a JRPG of that era, it gets you into the action pretty quickly, as it kind of just gives you a quick little cutscene. Every character is arriving at this place, and then it's just like, all right, go ahead and explore. And you can get into fights, and the battle system is the biggest surprise there, because it's not your standard, you know, basic attack kind of battle system to it. It's kind of more combo based.
Yeah.
But it doesn't explain this to you at all when it first throws you into fights.
Yeah.
So you're just seeing these percentages. I was like, one, you know, 98%, two, you know, 85%, three, like 75%. You're like, what the fuck does any of this mean?
Yeah.
But the early stuff you're doing is mostly brain dead, so it's not really too tough to get through those fights. But the interesting thing is that you're sort of going through these combos, and then if you finish off the enemy, it just kind of backs you out and gives you a chance to, you know, start up a new combo against another enemy. So not even necessarily like a, you had your chance, next person. Kind of thing, but you're also expending stamina. There's like another bar that you're kind of filling up that it doesn't explain at all. So yeah, kind of once you get through this whole first area, you kind of go to this village, and it kind of gets a very kind of Chrono Trigger, like, oh, you're supposed to meet somebody, but you overslept, you idiot. And your mom sends you out to go do your thing, and you can kind of run into the village chief that sort of runs you through this very long explanation of the various battle system mechanics to it. That is like, that's how it made a lot more sense, how it works. You would not have guessed how that works without that. The funny part is the old man that's showing you all this routinely just kills you throughout it. It's like, all right, I'll revive you just to show you what else is going on here. So, yeah, the story stuff, there's some good bits. There's a lot of it's just like, we're going to mess with you with ridiculous story. So whatever, but it's an all right game. It seems like it's trying to be very ambitious and not just be Chrono Trigger 2. You know, I imagine most people would have wanted Chrono Trigger 2. And this game tries for a lot of things, and at least for like the 2 hours or so I've been putting time into, it kind of doesn't really nail a lot of it.
Mm.
It's just kind of an interesting relic of a game that they tried a bunch of things with it, and you know, doesn't nail all that much of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a neat little relic, but if you're not willing to deal with it, you know, it's no point in grabbing it right now. You can wait to go on sale or just, you know, watch somebody else play it, whatever yeah, works for you. Much. But that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
I am almost done with Elden Ring. And I know I kept saying that for like the last week or two. It's like, I'm almost done with it. No, I'm literally almost done. I've only got one more boss to kill and I have officially finished the game. I thought, and it turns out there's actually one more demigod that I want to kill before I actually fight the last boss and kill them. For the record, I've already fought the last boss. I just died about a dozen times against them. I'm not going to spoil who the last boss in Elden Ring is. I will say that the last boss is literally the person responsible for breaking the Elden Ring. If you remember the old stuff that came out in like E3 and the game show and everything like that, it's that person using the hammer that they use to destroy it as their primary weapon. But before we do that, I decided to go back and fight one more of the demigods to kill. There was actually two demigods I had left, and I actually managed to get one of them earlier this week. That was Moog, the Lord of Blood, who is apparently Margit the Fell Omen's twin brother. And he uses lots of like bleeding magic and stuff. But I took care of him. So now I'm looking for Melania, Queen of Blades, who is the basically, she's generally considered to be the hardest boss in the entire game. She moves very fast. She has a katana that has incredible range, and her attacks hit very, very hard. And that's just like her first form. You actually have to fight her twice, and once you get her in her second form, she is not only still hard to kill, but she also casts Rot, which means Rot in this game is like a form of, it's like a like an even stronger form of poison. It will actually eat away at your health bar faster. But before I can do that, I got to go through the Hallig Tree and then the Brace of the Hallig Tree to get to her. So there is that. But other than that, yeah, I really am just about done with Elden Ring. And you never know, I might decide to go over there and do a second playthrough after I'm done, because, damn, that game is a lot of fun. And I'm pretty sure that there's going to be some DLC at some point, because there's a lot of places in that game that look like they should be accessible, but they're not, at least not right now. Can't wait to get to it, though. But other than that, books, the usual, you know, nothing much to talk about there. Music, I've been kind of on an alternative rock kick lately. I discovered this band from the early 90s called Jellyfish that I had never heard of or listened to, and now they're like the only thing I want to listen to at all right now. They're one of those bands that were so criminally underrated because they came out right around the time when grunge exploded, and these guys were like a very sort of happy-esque looking power pop type band. And, you know, next to, you know, Kurt Cobain decides to have a pep rally in a gymnasium, and that basically sets the entire rock music scene in one direction for like the next 5 years. Other than that, oh yeah. Chris, have you ever heard of Troma?
Yeah, it's where James Gunn got his start.
Yep, James Gunn started there. A lot of people got their start there. But Troma, they're the production company. They're probably most famous for the Toxic Avenger series. They've made like a bunch of, okay, Troma is basically like an example of like taking you know, sort of sleazy B movie weirdness, and then combining it with like 80s cheese and creating really sometimes scary, but a lot of times it's just really funny, gross out type stuff. And if you're on YouTube, they actually have an entire trauma movie that you can watch for free on there. It's called Class of Nuke'em High, and it's basically like a combination of like if you took like a cheesy B movie plot and combined it with like an early 80s like high school sex comedy that, you know, were like really popular back then. It's basically about like this high school that's literally like just a few miles away to a nuclear power plant. And then the nuclear power plant has a leak that gets into their water supply. Even before then, like there's weird mutation stuff happening. The Honor Society has basically become a bunch of lawless cretins. And they literally wear jackets that says cretins on the back. And what happens is the cretins manage to start talking to this dude that apparently works at one of the high security areas at the plant. And he starts selling them weed. They call it Atomic High because it's been hydroplanted with the water that's contaminated from the nuclear power plant. And then they start spreading that weed around. And well, you can probably guess what happens from there. Part of the reason I kind of really like this movie, even though it is very, very much an early 80s cheese fest that does things you could not get away with today at all. But one of the things I really love the fact is that I was watching this movie. You know how like old school like teen sex comedies were? You know, at some point there's the big bikini party or whatever, or maybe it's a toga party or whatever, and there's a band playing, and it's very formulaic. You know how these types of movies were. And holy shit, I look up there and the band is The Smithereens, one of my favorite bands ever. And I was like, wow, I did not know they actually were in this movie, but fuck it, there they are. Been doing that, watching other trauma as well. I like trauma films, but I absolutely would understand if other people don't, because they do lean pretty heavily into the gross out type stuff, and it's very 80s in both the right and wrong ways. So, you know, your mileage may vary. But you want to move on to, move on. You want to add anything else before we move on?
Nope.
Okay. Well, then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today we're going to talk about a little bit of the history of the automobile, specifically women and the automobile. Everybody who is familiar with cars has probably heard of the Mercedes-Benz or the Benz in general. Benz itself was originally part of the Benz Patent Motorwagen, which of course is very German. And the Germans, as most people will know, have a pretty heavy part of the history in the history of the automobile. Automobiles, especially when it comes to the, you know, popularization and spread of automobiles. Automobiles, when they first started, were very much a novelty, more or less. They were like, they tended to take very closely after like horse carriages, and controlling them tended to be very, shall we say, haphazard. Some of them would use like levers or levers. Some of them would use things that you would twist, or, you know, things to sort of, you know, like for example, the original Benz Patent Motorwagen was a three-wheeled automobile, and it was controlled using a little, you know, pole that you moved right or left to, you know, point the forward wheel in the direction that you wanted, because it was a three-wheeled automobile. But the automobile as we know it is not just the domain of men. It's also very much the domain of women. And we're going to talk very briefly about a woman who is very much a big part of automobile history. Her name was Bertha Benz. Bertha was the business partner and also the wife of Carl Benz, who is the man that is the man who is considered the one of the fathers of the modern automobile. He patented his Benz Patent motor car back in 1885. His wife was very much a part of helping him design it, even though for a long time her contributions were often completely overlooked. She was very much involved in the design. She was also very much involved in field testing. In fact, she is the person that we have to thank for the existence of brake lining. So, yeah, it's, you know, if you've ever wondered, it's like, you know, where cars went from, you know, holy shit, pull the brake lever and like, and then they decided to move over to combustible surfaces, you have her to thank. And the reason she came up with this is because of the other thing that she's probably most famous for. Bertha Benz was the very first person in history to drive an internal combustion engineered automobile over a long distance. Now, it's important to point out, you know, what most people who had or used automobiles up to this point basically used them for. Most people, when they had an automobile, they would usually use them for short distances because at that point, you know, they weren't considered as reliable as just, you know, good old fashioned horsepower. And by horsepower, I mean, you know, actual horses. So, you know, they would maybe go maybe just very short transit. A lot of times, especially in the early days like this, they would use some mechanics because, you know, this is a fairly complex prototypical technology. You need somebody because something's probably going to go wrong. Well, Bertha Benz decided to do something completely different. She decided that she wanted to go and visit her mother, or at least that's the excuse she gave. She wanted to prove to Carl Benz that the automobile that they had would become a financial success if it was shown to be useful to the general public. And also to, you know, give him confidence that his constructions had a future. So she ended up leaving for this journey on the 5th of August, 1888. She was about 39 years old, and she started from Mannheim, you know, and which is a university city in Baden-Württemberg. And she left with her sons, Richard, who was 13, and Eugene, who was 15 years old. And they both went in the Model 3, which is the literally the patent Motorwagen that we talked about, the three-wheeled one. Now, she had told, other than these two, she had told nobody else of her intention. She didn't tell Carl. She didn't tell her husband. Nor did she discuss any of this with the local authorities either. She basically went to, like she said, the excuse was to go visit her mother, but she had some other things she wanted to do too. She ended up leaving Mannheim around dawn, and along the way, she began to notice a bunch of issues that would happen after going a long distance. And I'll tell you what this distance was in towards the end here. But so first and foremost, the patent Motorwagen did not have a fuel tank. It only had about a 4.5 liter supply of petrol in the carburetor. So she had to find some Lagroin, which is the, you know, the solvent needed for the car to run. Now the solvent was only available at various apothecaries. So she stopped in Wieslock, which is, you know, a city that had a pharmacy, to purchase it. And you got to understand, at the time, you know, the whole thing of like buying gasoline and petrol and stuff like that, there was like no like major petrol type industry yet. All this stuff you had to get from like chemists, because, you know, they were the ones still running the experiments on. Then she cleaned the fuel line with her hat pin, you know, the pin she had in her hat, and she used one of her garters as an insulation material. A blacksmith that was nearby had to help mend a chain at one point. And then, of course, came the brake problem. See, the wooden brakes again, you know, they began to fail. So she had to get a cobbler to install leather. Again, you'll probably figure out, like, why wooden brakes would eventually fail. You know, like, Chris, you know why wooden brakes would eventually fail, right? It's the most obvious reason.
Yeah.
Friction, right?
Yep.
Eventually the friction, if it doesn't sit, it even just set the shit on fire, it will eventually just wear it down to nothing. So she installed the leather, got a cobbler to install the leather. First brake linings in history. At the same time, there was an evaporated cooling supply system that was employed to cool the engine, which meant that she needed to get water because otherwise, you know, you got to keep the engine from overheating. So every time that they would stop, they would add water into the supply, into the cooling system. Now, another issue they came up very quickly with was going uphill because the car did have two gears, but neither one of them was enough that they could go up an incline. So they had to occasionally just, you know, get out and push. But eventually she did reach Forzheim, which was her eventual destination that she had planned on. And it was around dusk. She decided to notify her husband by a telegram. And by the time the one-way trip at the end of it was about 106 kilometers. That's literally about 66 miles. She did, of course, drive back several days later. As you can imagine, it was kind of a big deal at the time. It got a lot of publicity. You know, because of all the experience and the she took down, they were able to better perfect the model. So they would add in, you know, the standard now brake lines. They would introduce different gear so that, you know, they could actually go up inclines. And more than anything else, it proved that in the newly born automotive industry, you needed to do test drives, not just to test the capabilities of the automobile, but also to get publicity. Now, Miss Benz herself lived until 1944, where she passed away from natural causes. Her husband, Carl, had died roughly about 15, 20 years earlier. The rest of the family would live in this home for the next 25 years. In his memoir, in 1925, that he published a few years before his death, he said the following: "Only one person remained with me in the small ship of life when it seemed destined to sink. That was my wife. Bravely and resolutely, she set the new sails of hope." And so that is Bertha Benz, showing very much that women have always been very much a part of automotive history and of car culture itself, not just as pretty hood ornaments, but very much a part of the creation and improvement of the automobile as we know it. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right, so with that, we're going on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And buckle up, people, because we got a few. First big one that we got this week is Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin from the state of New York. He resigned this week after a federal court announced charges of both bribery and wire fraud against him.
Yep. He was charged with this, let's see, Tuesday, for procuring illicit campaign funds. Surrendered to the FBI Tuesday morning. And the case being handled by the Southern District Court of New York. He was appointed as Lieutenant Governor in August 2021. After, stepped down. He's charged with one count of federal program bribery, one count of honest services wire fraud, one count of conspiracy to commit those offenses, and two counts of falsification of records. They carry with them a conviction of 5 to 20 years in prison per count. But while a state senator in 2019, He was granted $50,000 to use in his district toward entities such as libraries, schools, nonprofit organizations. The money allegedly went to a nonprofit ran by a real estate developer who Benjamin had approached about fundraising. The developer initially voiced uncertainty about being able to procure campaign funds for Benjamin, but upon receipt of the grant, contributed $25,000 to Benjamin's reelection campaign. Basically for about a year and a half, he continued securing campaign funding for Benjamin's unsuccessful run for New York City comptroller.
Mm-hmm.
And the effort to conceal the scheme, Benjamin allegedly failed to provide the New York State Board of Elections with documents identifying the owners of all limited liability corporations who contributed to his campaigns. And so, yeah, kind of did not make it all that hard to figure out what happened here. So, yeah, he's run himself out of a big position.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely of his own making.
Yep. And Benjamin is a Democrat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, Democrats, even at our worst, they do try to make sure that shit like this doesn't happen. Whereas Republicans have pretty much given up all pretenses and just don't give a shit anymore. Now for that other big story. Yeah, New York Department, even though they were completely fucking useless, have arrested the man suspected of carrying out a shooting on a New York City subway that shot 10 people.
Yep. He managed to get away from the scene for about a day.
Yeah.
But managed to, at a certain point, just call in his own, call in the tip line, reporting himself.
Yeah, like the dude actually left his fucking credit card there. Like he was trying to tell him, hey, I did this.
Yeah. Or that, tell him where he was.
Yeah.
Not necessarily admitting to anything, I don't know, but because he was a suspect for this. I think they were at one point thinking it was two people, whatever, but he said he was at a McDonald's, but when they finally showed up, he was about a block away, and somebody was working nearby, called in and told him where exactly he was. The whole thing was kind of a wild thing that happened. He used a 9mm Glock handgun, shot about 10 people, but bought it legally in Ohio about 11 years ago. He had 9 prior arrests in New York from 92 to 98 on charges including possession of burglary tools, theft of service, and criminal sex act. 3 times arrested in Jersey. This luckily nobody was seriously hurt or killed like that, but the NYPD did not do a great job in responding to this, because I believe they didn't even like freeze those lines once the reports came in of a potential shooting or even explosion. They were thinking it was at a certain point. So kind of just let those trains just kind of keep going, which is not really what you do when you want to, stop potential suspects and witnesses from getting away. But yeah, they ended up luckily finding a U-Haul key at the scene of the shooting, traced it to a van that they believe he rented in Philly, and that led to them thinking he was the prime suspect. They popped one smoke grenade before firing the handgun. Yeah, 10 people were shot. Another 13 suffered injuries ranging from smoke inhalation to falls and panic attacks. So luckily it seems like those people will be okay in the end, which is great news. Of course, now people are spreading news about he's a black nationalist, white nationalist, but black. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
Like the theory that people are thinking is the correct one is that he most likely is an incel.
Yeah, it's possible.
So.
Or maybe he's just an asshole. Like, that's a completely valid excuse, too.
Yeah, that's part of the incel experience.
Yeah. moving on to more assholes. Hence the title. We've got Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, who signed a bill banning abortions after 15 weeks, pretty much copy-pasted entirely from the Texas.
Yeah, and this one that takes effect July 1st replaced a previous law that allowed abortions until 24 weeks of pregnancy, saying House Bill 5 protects babies in the womb who have beating hearts, who can move, who can taste, who can see, and who can feel pain. Which is like, probably not. But yeah, the new 15-week ban does not make exceptions for a case of incest, rape, or human trafficking. It does allow an abortion if it would save the life of a pregnant person or prevent serious injury to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, how nice. You only care about the mother if they would potentially die as a result.
Mm-hmm.
It also includes exceptions for fetal abnormalities that are discovered after 15 weeks. In such cases, two doctors must sign off saying the baby will die shortly after birth before an abortion can happen. And of course, it seems like people are going to be trying to challenge this. There's a similar law that's going before the Supreme Court out of Mississippi. So yeah, there you go.
Mm. Yeah, and finally, speaking of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott finally dropped his immigration orders, causing chaos for truckers from Mexico bringing products to the U.S. You know, everybody had basically told him this is going to happen, but no, he's Greg Abbott. He's got to be the asshole in the
room. Yeah, he's been just trying to use immigration as a political toy for himself.
Yeah.
Sending people that have just crossed into the border, just put them on a bus and sending them to D.C. Like, it's your problem, Biden.
Yeah, except that's also biting him in the ass because all... Yeah, we...
Yeah, it's sending them without any money or clothes or anything to be just like, just use them as a political prop.
Mm-hmm.
Which he doesn't care about. He doesn't like immigrants.
No.
But yeah, with this whole thing, it was requiring an extra inspection from the DPS. Even though the Border Patrol already did one previously.
Mm-hmm.
So you had trucks oftentimes waiting more than 24 hours, mm-hmm. If not longer, before being able to get into the country.
Mm-hmm.
And was using this as a whole ploy to, you know, I was just going to get people like, oh, see, Biden's inflation is going amok, mm-hmm. causing all these problems. And it's like, this one's all you.
Yeah.
I think coming into this, at a certain point, realizing, like, our store shelves are going to start running out of food and other stuff because of this shit, even as fast as this weekend. So while he was parading around that he had signed deals with a number of governors in the state that said, like, oh, we're going to just... lift this whole thing. Which shows just how vital this was to anything.
Yeah.
This is seems like a big sign of what the GOP is doing right now, which is any sort of sabotage they can, even if it's self-sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that the media will not ever call them out on any of this.
Mm.
And try to hold them accountable in the way that they try to hold Biden accountable for any little thing that happens in this country, whether it has anything to do with him or his administration. And they're trying to bring chaos for the midterms.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fun bit of hell we got here for the rest of this year.
Yeah. Yeah. But fortunately, it's not all assholes. Because, once again, we've also got some heroes of the week. And our first one's kind of a big one. Alisa Natkin of the San Francisco Giants, first woman to coach on the field in Major League Baseball history.
Yep. She was one of the bench coaches,
mm-hmm.
An assistant coach of sorts, but came into coach first base for the Giants in the third inning here on, I guess, Thursday or no, Wednesday, where she, first base coaches just hang out at first base and let the players know what they're supposed to do when they're coming by.
Mm-hmm.
All kind of stuff. Nothing really super huge, but her being a woman in this is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I got a warm ovation from the crowd at Oracle Park, as well as handshakes from Padres first baseman there that was playing against them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great news. More women can be involved in this sport because it's not all that different from women's softball and all that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. All right. Moving on from there. Another woman, Rachel Balkovic, became the first woman to manage the affiliate of an MLB team.
Yeah, she was coaching or managing the Class A Tampa Tarpons, who's one of the New York Yankees minor league teams.
Yeah.
Talking about how she, what was it here? She had played softball when she was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And was sort of not really even aware of necessarily the option of going into coaching, like minor league baseball was like maybe a thing that she would be interested in. Mm. So she managed to get this lucky break, worked for the Tarpons. Even before the game, signed some autographs.
Mm.
Also got a nice ovation when she was introduced.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. Managed to coach the team to a win. Mm. Which is another cool thing to happen.
Yeah. Very cool. And finally, the New York Public Library announced that they will make books being banned around the country available to everyone for free.
Yep. More than 1,500 books are being challenged to be removed from libraries in the last year. They have launched an effort to make some of these banned books available for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
They're calling the initiative Books for All. Allows any reader age 13 and older to access commonly banned books through the library's app until the end of May. No wait times to access the books, no fines. Typically, you need to have an actual library card for people that are from New York, kind of thing. But they are opening it up.
Yeah,
they got a list here of a decent amount of the books that are going to be available for that.
Mm-hmm.
The Brooklyn Public Library is also doing something similar called Books Unbanned for those aged 13 to 21.
Yeah.
Some cool stuff there.
Yeah. And definitely much needed. All right. So with that, that is the end of the show proper. And now we move on to the proper show proper. And unfortunately, we had a rather shocking death that happened this week. Although apparently for those who knew him, this had been something that had not been unexpected. Sadly, Mr. Gilbert Gottfried passed away this week at the age of, I think, 67.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gottfried was, well, let's be honest, for a certain generation, be known as the voice of Iago from Aladdin. That's certainly where I first heard him.
Yeah.
And, that movie did insanely well, so it pretty much made him immortal. But outside of that, Gilbert Gottfried was a fairly well-known comedian. He was somewhat divisive as a comedian. He perfected a certain voice. It's the voice that he uses for Iago. That's the voice he used when he did stand up. That loud, shrill, almost squawk of a voice. And he also was notorious for the fact he was pretty much the human embodiment of what? Too soon? To him, the concept of like a certain amount of time needing to pass before you could joke about something was completely non-existent. This was a man who told a 9/11 roughly 3 days after 9/11 happened. He made a joke about Princess Diana pretty much the week after she died. But he also pretty much managed to sort of get under just about everybody's skin. He was kind of an equal opportunity offender. But he also probably gave the most amazing version of the Aristocrats ever told on stage. So much so that it reduced everybody around to just screaming and howling and rolling on the floor. And of course, you know, he did a bunch of other stuff too. He, you know, he was in sitcoms. He was a cast member of SNL for a short time, way back in the early 80s. And just in general, he was very much a divisive but loved comedian. And he had been dealing with an illness for the last year. And sadly, it finally got him this week. So, yeah. R.I.P., man.
Yeah, he's kind of the most iconic voice out there.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody other that could compare is maybe Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah.
With his own weird, like, kind of druggy voice.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of to it. Yeah, especially, like, recently in the past, like, 5 to 10 years, he was just kind of happy to...
Mm-hmm.
Use the voice to do whatever people asked or paid him to do
mm-hmm.
on Cameo and all that kind of stuff, where people would give him the lyrics to WAP and ask him to just perform that, like a Cameo video, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
John Oliver had him on last week tonight a bunch to replace segments that would get taken out for the UK broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Not to just like read like, here's 3-star Yelp reviews
mm-hmm.
or, you know, these kind of places, that kind of thing. He was always happy to do. So yeah, that was, seemed like a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of cool roles.
Oh yeah.
There. Stuff that maybe in this day and age you wouldn't necessarily expect out of him.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Beverly Hills Cop 2 and other stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's sad to see him go. But
yeah,
he gets to hang out with his best friends who also passed away
here
in the past few months.
Yeah. Yeah, the rule of three really hit the this year. But yeah. Okay, so moving on from there, we're now on to the serious stuff. President Biden has officially accused Vladimir Putin of genocide in Ukraine. And, yeah, as you can imagine, that public kind of declaration is a really big deal.
Yep. As you said here, yes, I called it genocide. It has become clearer and clearer that Putin is just trying to wipe out the idea of even being able to be Ukrainian.
Mm.
Which is not wrong.
They're
just trying to kill as many people as they can to try to break Zelensky and the others fighting, just leaving dead people in the streets as a way to get back at them for even fighting back and pushing the Russians to this point,
mm-hmm.
which continues to not work so well for them.
No, in fact, they had their flagship battleship sunk this week. The same one that, you know, tried to get all those Ukrainian soldiers on that island to surrender, and in response they said, "Hey, battleship, go fuck yourself." Yeah, that one sank this week. Yeah. The Russians claimed it was because of an accident. There was a fire on board, some of the ammunition, and that exploded. The Ukrainians are saying, "No, we fucking sunk it." So, who knows? Either way, it's at the bottom of the sea. Yeah. Honestly, right now, a lot of people are still wanting to figure out how this is going to end. Because shit is getting increasingly more tense in Russia itself. The parts of the military have defected. There are people who have just straight up surrendered. The oligarchs that are in power at some point, you know, once they see their fortunes start drying up, are going to be like, okay, this guy has to go somehow. I don't know if it's going to be like a military coup or something. It's going to be something.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on from there. South Dakota's Attorney General has officially been impeached over a fatal car crash he took part in 2020. And this is a story that's kind of been ongoing for the last few months.
Yeah, it's been a story we talked about a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where he had abandoned his vehicle in the night because mm-hmm. It had gotten into an accident. Claimed it was a deer or some other large animal. Ended up being a person.
Mm-hmm.
So much so you could find like the glasses embedded in the car.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Tried to claim like he did nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
All this and just kind of hung over the administration there. But yeah, the state house has finally voted to impeach him.
Mm-hmm.
See, last year he pleaded no contest to a pair of traffic misdemeanors in the crash. Could he make an illegal lane change? But yeah, he sent defiant letters to the House and the Senate, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Urging them to vote against impeachment. Saying in a few hours, your vote will set a precedent for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
No state has ever impeached an elected official for a traffic accident.
It wasn't just an accident, dude. You killed a dude. By all intents and purposes, it's not just an accident. It's vehicular manslaughter.
Yeah. But yeah, the legislature never investigated impeachment for an elected official and only once in 1917 launched an impeachment inquiry into a circuit judge. But yeah, he also, in that letter, accused the governor, Kristi Noem, of interfering in the investigation, of supporting impeachment because of the attorney general's investigations into her behavior. Second letter from his spokesman delved into evidence, allegations, and misconceptions about the case. Which is like, that's kind of the MyPillow dude actions here. The House voted 36-31 for impeaching him.
Mm-hmm.
They rejected the recommendation of a GOP-backed majority report from a special investigative committee. Sided with Noem, who has argued that Ravensborg lied to investigators.
Mm.
Democrats also pushed for impeachment, arguing that he was not forthcoming to law enforcement officers and had abused the power of his office.
Mm.
Which would be important things you would want out of your attorney general.
Yeah.
Because they're the top cop in your state, essentially. Mm-hmm. They have to go through the Senate and get 2/3 majority to convict him on the impeachment charges to actually be removed fully.
Mm-hmm.
But he's at least temporarily removed until that trial happens.
Mm.
So that'll be their first trial for that.
Mm-hmm. All right. And now for some more political bullshit. The Republican National unanimously to leave the Commission on Presidential Debates. Now, the Commission on Presidential Debates was originally formed back in the 80s. And it was a bipartisan effort. Now, some 33 years later, they decided they wanted out.
Yeah, because they claim it's biased against them.
Yep.
Which is because you're a fascist group now.
Yeah.
Fascist groups don't like entertaining debates where they may not be the correct, you know, saying factual things.
Mm-hmm.
Being called out on that.
Yeah.
So they're claiming they're going to find a better way to do this.
Mm-hmm. They aren't, but they're claiming to.
Yeah, they're just going to probably refuse to have debates.
Yeah. Which is may or may not go well for them. We don't know. It's just going to further isolate the party and further fuel that echo chamber that has been slowly dragging them downwards. We'll see what the effect is.
Yeah.
But, moving on from there. Now, this is a bit of good news. I fucking loved when I heard this because I don't think people really understand how big of a deal this is. For the first time in the United States, wind power managed to eclipse both coal and nuclear on the same day.
Yep. This was for March 29th.
Mm-hmm.
That wind turbines produced more electricity than coal and nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Energy Information Administration, it announced the... There have been times where wind-powered electricity has gone higher than coal or nuclear on separate days.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time they surpassed both on the same day.
Yep.
Natural gas is still the largest source of electricity generation in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, more and more wind is showing its effectiveness, and it's cheaper than a lot of other options out there.
Yeah. And furthermore, the actual tech itself is also still evolving. They are now creating turbine-less wind turbines now. So even those big propellers are going to be eventually obsolete too. And they're building more and more of these wind turbines. And the thing is, a lot of the big farmers are more than okay with building them because they can just farm around them, and it gets them a big fat 50 grand check from the government to build them there. So, yeah, it shows that, the energy needs is evolving, and we're getting better, and we are getting closer to the day when we will no longer really have to rely so much on coal or nuclear power, period.
Yeah.
Now, if we can just get past oil, we'll get there eventually, I guess. And now for some more good news. U.S. citizens can now choose the gender X on their passport applications if they wish to identify as non-binary or for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah, that's in addition to the F and M options that have been available for probably the extent that they've had passports out there.
Yeah. Also pretty sure that there's other countries that already do this.
Yeah. I believe Canada is one of those.
Yeah. So once again, we're kind of dragging up the rear, but it's a thing now, so I can't complain, I guess.
Yeah, it started as of this past Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And the websites for this stuff has those options available now.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that is definitely progress. Just wish it had happened sooner, but it's here now.
Yeah.
And you can expect the normal, regular screeching voices that are going to be immensely pissed off about this. But you know what? Let's not give them any fucking publicity. So, moving on. Now we got some science news. The Hubble Space Telescope confirms the largest comet nucleus that's ever been seen by astronomers. And yeah, this thing's pretty neat looking.
Yeah, this is the largest icy comet nucleus they have ever seen. This is one I believe we've talked about before, Comet C/2014 UN-271, or Bernardinelli Bernstein.
Mm-hmm.
Has about 80 miles in diameter, which is larger than the state of Rhode Island. The comet's nucleus is about 50 times larger than that of most comets, and its mass is estimated to be a gigantic 500 trillion tons.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot. This comet is literally the tip of the iceberg for many thousands of comets that are too faint to see in the more distant parts of the solar system. David Jewett, a professor of planetary science and astronomy at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
It was discovered by astronomers Pedro Bernardinelli and Gary Bernstein using archival images from the Cerro Tololo Inter-American Observatory in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
Been observed since 2010 when it was 3 billion miles away from the sun. Have been studied since then. NASA says there was a challenge in measuring the comet's nucleus because it was too far away for the Hubble telescope to determine its size. Instead, scientists had to make a computer model that was adjusted to fit the images of the comet's bright light that they got from the telescope's data. Expect traveling at 22,000 miles per hour. Massive comet is still coming from the edge of the solar system. We'll never get closer than about 1 billion miles away from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, that won't be until 2031.
Mm-hmm.
The previous record holder for largest comet nucleus was discovered in 2002. Comet C/2002 VQ94 was approximately 60 miles across.
Mm.
Still a big one there, but they got one that's 80 miles in diameter.
And now for another piece of really fascinating science. U.S. officials confirmed that a meteor that streaked over Papua New Guinea and hit the Earth way back in 2014 is the first known meteor that originated outside of our solar system.
Yep, it is the first known interstellar meteor that has hit the Earth. It's known as CNEOS 2014-0108.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably guess it crash landed January 8th, 2014, but did not until last week did government officials confirm the origin of the space rock. Determined as interstellar or from beyond the solar system by Amir Siraj in 2019. At the time, Amir was a student at Harvard University, working to determine his findings with his academic advisor, Abraham Loeb, a professor of science at the university. He wrote about this process for the Scientific American, studying what was at the time considered the first known interstellar meteor called Oumuamua, which was identified in October 2017.
Mm.
But yeah, though he and Loeb were confident in their findings about the one in 2014, it predates the one that I just mentioned by about 3 years. That was 2017. Scientific journals refused to publish their report because their data came from a NASA database that doesn't disclose certain information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, last Wednesday, a memo by the U.S. Space Force Lieutenant General John Shaw tweeted officially confirming their findings and said that the velocity estimate reported to NASA is sufficiently accurate to indicate an interstellar trajectory. So yeah, it's now one of three such interstellar meteors that have been confirmed to date, alongside the one from 2017.
Hmm.
In another interstellar comet, Borisov. So, there you go.
Mm. Fascinating. All right, then. So now we're moving on to probably one of the other major stories of this week, which was that for the last couple of weeks, Elon Musk has had this wild hair up his ass where he decided, I want to own Twitter. So he's made various moves to try and get in. One of the things is he wanted to join his board of directors. This week, he decided, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not much to add there. He decided, no, yeah. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, and then the Twitter CEO, currently Parag Agrawal, posted the message he sent to the internal team about this. Yeah, he was the largest shareholder at 9.2%.
Yeah, which kind of pissed off the shareholders because he did not properly disclose that. So now they're actually suing him over it.
Yeah, the suit was filed in the Southern District of New York. Sergey Musk was 10 days late in filing his legally mandated disclosure form after amassing more than 5% of Twitter shares. With a buying binge that started in January.
Mm-hmm.
I had reached the 5% disclosure threshold by March 24th, but he didn't file the proper paperwork until April 4th. And after the news hit, those shares shot up a good 27%.
Yeah.
So it creates this whole situation where he's profiting off of this.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. And in the end, he's probably just going to get off with a fine that's going to be much less than what he's made off of the stock at this point.
Yeah. And on top of that, he also announced that he purchased Twitter outright in a very obvious hostile takeover attempt.
Yeah. Saying he was going to buy it for $54.20 a share, leading to about $43 billion total for the company, which is probably a low ball.
Yeah.
Of sorts?
I'd say so.
The stocks at that point closed at about 45.85 on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So not really that far off, and ended up creating a whole weird scenario where other weirdo rich people were like, oh, I want to buy it to make it more crypto friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And all this shit. He claims he wants to take it private.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter to be private and make it a safe haven for free speech and all this, which is like, it already is.
Mm-hmm.
Very much comes off him like wanting to make it more like a Parler or Getter or Truth Social, which is like, no.
Yeah. You don't want it to be Truth Social, because Truth Social is fucking eating it right now.
Yeah, Trump hasn't used it since that first like message he posted.
Yeah.
Which, if he's not going to use his own social media service, then why should anybody else?
Yeah. Nice job quitting your Senate job for that, Devin.
Well, he's got to make that money to keep suing the cow Twitter account.
Yeah, which lost on appeal again, by the way.
Yeah. But yeah, ended up creating this whole scenario where there was a group of shareholders that got together to buy up some more stock to try to ensure that they can kind of freeze out Musk,
mm-hmm.
become the top shareholders in the company.
Yeah, they have implemented basically a poison pill policy. Basically, what it means is that for the foreseeable future, nobody can buy more than 15% more, you know, anything close to like 15% of shares in order to make sure that another hostile takeover attempt like that from Elon Musk can happen. So for the time being, he has been fended off.
Yeah, that's from the board of directors.
Yeah, unanimous, by the way.
Yeah. That implements a limited duration shareholder rights plan that should hopefully keep Elon Musk at bay.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because he's a fucking attention seeking troll.
Yeah.
That has too much money for his own good.
Yep. Dude, yeah. Fuck that guy. Like, there's really no other way to put it. And finally, last story for the night, The Batman is coming to HBO Max on April 18th. So I believe that's Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's finally going to be hitting after going in theaters March 4th. Seemed like it was a lot longer ago.
Yeah. Was that? Have you seen this?
No, I haven't had the. It would be like a 4-hour block I would have to set up to go
see. Yeah.
That kills like an entire afternoon.
Yeah.
Especially because I want to see it during the week and not see it with weirdos.
Yeah. Understood.
It's like, there's no great time to go for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was readily kind of heading towards a point where I would see the new Sonic the Hedgehog movie before The Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But this happening, and then I will probably go see Sonic on Tuesday, because I'm not going to see it this weekend and see it with, you know, 50 other children.
Mm-hmm.
On Easter
weekend. Apparently apparently the second Sonic movie is really good.
Yeah.
Mm.
If it's more of what the first one was doing well, then
yeah.
Yeah, that's not a huge surprise, but yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that'll be fun to see, especially trying to avoid spoilers. People are trying to do that for this stuff. People trying to do that for Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Where the character's going to show up. It's like, why does anybody need to know this?
Mm-hmm.
It's because you're assholes. You want the first dibs.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to know who's coming up.
Yeah. But, that pretty much is, I think we got ourselves a show. And we managed to keep it under 2 hours again. Very nice. Anyway, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something, get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. Got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, we can get you your daily bit, weekly bit of unscripted shenanigans at places such as Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. Once again, as usual, our thoughts are with the people of Ukraine and Russia. And even though the pandemic is winding down, we still encourage you to get vaccinated if you have not been vaccinated yet. And if you feel like you need a booster shot, or hell, even a second booster shot, if you're in that particular group that may need one, don't hesitate. Go and get it. Any discomfort you feel, trust me, will be a small price compared to what happens when you actually get COVID. As somebody who has been on the receiving end of both, believe me, just trust me on this. Yep, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. And we're going to wish you all the best. Join us next week when we have more shenanigans to shenanigan over. We'll see you then. Good night, everybody.